Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, sir. You look like a man who could do with some more pedals.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. I love a good pedal. The only problem is pedals are so expensive.
Well, I've got some great news for you. From the 1st of October to the 16th of November, you can buy 2 Boss pedals and get the third, the cheapest one, for free.
For free, you say?
Indeed. Go to www.boss3for2.com. That's the number 3 and the number 2 with the word 4 to check the pedal combination and all of the terms and conditions. You can then go to any Boss UK dealer to claim the deal.
My goodness. The only question now is, which pedal?
That's up to you, isn't it? Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
How do I turn you down? It was so loud.
And Joe Branton.
Hello.
Sorry, that was enthusiastic. Been warming up my vocal cords this weekend by visiting Whitehawk FC for the fabulous FA Cup win. I thought I'd point this out early on because we are watching the FA Cup draw live as we record this.
Well, I wanted to watch it live. You wouldn't let me watch it live because you said it'd slow down the internet.
We need the bandwidth for
Can we not just have it
Matt
on
Knight.
The telly?
We could have it on the telly.
It's on BBC Two.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll fix that in a minute. We'll sort that in a second.
Yeah, sorry. One of the best games of football.
One of the best games. And apologies for anyone who doesn't care about football.
We do.
Because, well, I do care about football in general, but not as much as I care about Whitehawk FC because it's more of a community than it is a football club. We will at some point in this podcast when the Whitehawk ball gets drawn, I'm sure we'll comment on that. So just a warning up front, there will be some vague, very short football content this week.
Cool.
How is everyone?
Can you get picked with a premiership team, or are you not that far?
Not yet.
Like Whitehawk versus like Manchester United. They're still a team, right?
That's right, they're still a team. We need to get through. So we got through the first round, and tonight they're drawing for the second round, and the second round is still up to League One, and then the third round brings in the Premiership and the Championship teams.
What amps do they use, like, for that football tone?
JBL.
I mean, I can't stress enough how much we're losing listeners because no one really...
I just wanted to mention it up front that the draw is on as we're doing this and we're giving up this time. We could be at the ground with the BBC cameras.
It's about guitars. So you guys can...
And we're here doing the podcast and there will be a small football segment later on.
There's already been 3 minutes maybe and 6 seconds.
Okay, fine. How is everyone?
Unbelievable.
I'm very well, thank you. I've taken 21,000 steps today.
Okay, so this
That's
is just
a day off
the
for sport, you there.
This is just sports podcast. How many
sportscast?
Why are you counting your steps?
The iPhone does it for you.
Okay. Well, just as
the iPhone 6 does. Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah.
Does
the
it?
iPhone 6 has got a health app. I don't know if it's actually and it counts your steps for you. It also does a lot of other weird things. It measures some really weird measurements.
Is there a point when you can do too many steps? Will it tell me that?
Yeah, it's 5, like you've 6, walked 7, too far. sit down, you have walked too far.
Okay.
And I, apart from that, I haven't really done anything guitar related today. It's been a disappointing day all round.
We should say that you were down at the weekend.
Yes, where we did lots of guitar related things.
We did some guitar related stuff. We filmed demo videos for Magnetic Effects White Atom, which is a pedal we've been banging on about and is very, very good indeed.
It was extremely good.
Yeah.
It was.
You guys hadn't heard that yet, had you? I'm kind of the only one who'd got my hands on it. So, yeah. What else did we do? We did some.
It was a bit like. It was kind of a ZVEX Fuzz Factory. It went to that sort of level of glitchiness.
Yes.
I'll tell you what I enjoyed. Was the carbon copy Bright, which actually sounded much better.
We did an AB style demo, didn't we, with the standard carbon copy versus the carbon copy Bright, and I wasn't so sure it was better. I just thought it was brighter.
It reacted in a different way, didn't it?
Well, it did, but in kind of like you'd have to push. I thought it was exactly the same as the carbon copy, but you'd have to push the carbon copy further. Push it in a sense of having the rotary controls round further in a clockwise direction than you do on the bike to get the same thing. I mean, that, I guess, means that, you know, the nth level of the carbon copy Bright is a much more extreme delay than you get from the standard carbon copy. But I still thought,
I think you could have both on your pedal board, though, and they'd both be useful in different ways, which I thought was kind of good. They haven't basically just made... Because the carbon copy is so good.
Yeah.
Like, how do you make another pedal that's, like, that as equally as many people would buy rather than just going, oh, actually, I'll just stick to the carbon copy, which happens so many times when companies do, like, I don't know, a pedal and then they do a similar version of it and you're like, well, actually, was there any point in doing that? Because it doesn't sound anywhere near as good as the original.
Dunlop are the absolute, the be-all and end-all of that, aren't they? Yeah. Which is strange because MXR is Dunlop.
Yeah. I was going to say Electro-Harmonics fall foul of that sometimes as well. You know, there's like three or four different versions of the same pedal.
I suppose, but I think they all do something fairly... I mean, with the exception being the Big Muff, you know, because obviously you've got the Big Muff, the English Muffin, the Double Muff.
Nano Big Muff.
Overdrive, the, you know...
Metal Muff.
Metal Muff Deluxe.
Yeah, Metal Muff Nano. You know, there's a bunch of those. Other than that, I think pretty much everything else they do is pretty... diverse, whereas, you know, Dunlop will do, you know, they do the Fuzz Factories, the big plate ones, the original ones, and then they did the Fuzz Face, and then they did the Fuzz Face Minis, and they've done a bunch of those.
Yeah.
And I find it very difficult to tell a huge amount of difference. I understand doing a germanium one, and a
silicon
one, and I understand why they've done the Hendrix one, but then they did the other Hendrix one, and you know,
and they did the Joe Bonamassa one.
Now they
as well,
did the Joe Bonamassa, and it's just and the same goes for the Crybabies. I think a lot of the Crybabies sound pretty similar to the Crybaby, just not as good as the Crybaby.
Yeah,
They don't differentiate themselves out enough.
Although it's funny actually, because we, talking of demo videos, we did Crybaby Mini versus Crybaby, and I actually thought the Crybaby Mini sounded much better because it had settings.
Yeah,
in there.
The ability to change the sweep, and yeah, it made it did make a big difference. You do have to open it up, the insides of it, to make the
I tell
the
you
change.
The one thing though that was great that they really obviously thought of was they didn't put rubber feet on it. It's just a flat base, so obviously if you're going to put it on a pedal board, you don't have to worry about one being rubber feet or two taking the rubber feet off and then it's still not sitting very flat because you've got four screw heads.
I guess the logic behind that is if they're making a mini version of it, it's 100% for people with pedal boards, because one of the most off-putting things about the ordinary Crybaby and any wah pedal is that it takes up such an awkward amount of space. I remember, Mark, when you decided to make a pedal board for the first time, you really struggled to find somewhere on your board to put the Crybaby.
I kind of want a Crybaby Mini now after seeing one this weekend. Like,
I don't know why they weren't always that size. I mean, I understand why. It's because it's the rough size of someone's foot. But you can still operate it exactly the same. I saw no hindrance in the Mini.
There's always been smaller wah pedals. Like, there's been that the Morley one for a while, and I've seen a few other ones. And I guess it's just kind of like a historical thing. Like, traditional Crybaby is like, that's how big it is. So that's how they've always done them. So, it's kind of a welcome change, I guess. And like you said, Matt, so there's three settings on there, high, middle, and low. Is that right?
Yeah, so high is the standard Crybaby, which for me has always been more toppy, which is why I prefer the Vox Wah although they obviously started life as the same pedal. And then you've got medium and low, but low's got that more kind of bassy sweep to it, which I think works much better. I think with wah, I prefer having like a much lower sweep. And that's why I always liked the Morley ones, because they had kind of like a more extreme sweep to them.
Yeah.
The problem with the Morley, because Morley's, actually think about it, it's one of those kind of pedal companies that sort of completely almost disappeared, really. They're not, there's nothing really out there, and they could probably bring a lot of that back in like better enclosures, and yeah, they'd sound really good, because the like the Mark Tremonti wah pedal was always like a really popular unit, but
you know, it
takes up like
one,
half a, yeah, but it takes up half a like a pedal train junior. Do you know what I mean? You could get that and a distortion pedal on.
It's always weird that they've had, the Morley ones have had that massive flat footprint to them, you know, like a bass part, that kind of big block. And yeah, really, they don't really use any of that space. You know, you could trim that down massively. But didn't they do like a mini? They do a mini series, or do they do a little alligator? But that's still full size.
No, they did. They did a mini. Did they do a mini volume? But then it was still pretty big. But it's this, that company, they've just not changed anything since the '70s, and I think Electro Harmonic sort of
including
did the
logo
same for quite a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, including their logo. But yeah, Electro Harmonics did the same for a while until they started putting everything in those new die-cast boxes, and it's worked much, much better. But yeah, it's one of those companies. Maybe they're not owned by themselves anymore. Maybe someone else owns them and doesn't do much with the brand. But you could definitely, like, in terms of like optical wire, you could definitely bring that back, and it would probably be very, very popular, because, you know, there's no parts to wear out, and I think you get a better, more dynamic sweep as well.
They've got a very particular sound, though, haven't they? They've got a very much a kind of like Steve Vai type wah sound, you know, where you get that kind of weird modern swell to it rather than like...
And quite a lot of mid-range.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, really... Not harsh mid-range, but it's almost like synthesizer-like.
Yeah, 80s
like really
mid-range.
Vocal-like.
It sounds more... Weirdly, it sounds more like when you turn up... Say like on an active bass or something, where you turn up the mid of a parametric EQ and then sweep across that mid-range. That's kind of what what a Morley wah sounds like.
A bit like the orange pedal, the Bax band guitar, demoed. Which
you're the king of the segues today. That's something else that we demoed.
Well, it's because talking of parametric EQ, it's got a parametric, you know,
that
mid-control
pedal is the weirdest decision for a pedal. Like, it's an absolutely cracking preamp and drive, and it's brilliant, but it's absolutely massive.
It is massive,
like, absolutely massive. Like really well built and everything. And I understand that that's why it has the price tag that it does. But I just thought it was
it's huge.
Yeah,
but I guess that's what happens if you're a company that doesn't really make pedals. I guess they're making like one big kind of showcase.
Yeah, I guess
showcase unit, and it is. Like we're saying, you know, it's got the parametric mids and it's got a, you know, full kind of amp EQ. It's more, much more like a kind of amp in a box than it is a
a
pedal.
I guess that is.
And
what it is.
Proven by the fact that the cab sim out actually sounds
really
good.
Really good as well, because we used it, didn't we? We used both. We used we were red boxing into your Hughes and Kettner Tubemeister 5, which was previously yours, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
We recorded everything both through the cab sim from the orange pedal.
And I haven't edited the video yet, but the plan is to switch between the red box and the orange cab sim.
And certainly Orange aren't the company I expect to make good amp sims.
Well, no, when we plugged it in, you were like, that's not going to work very well. Turns out it sounded amazing.
Yeah, exactly, so, which is weird. I mean, it's such a thing doing a cab sim.
Yeah.
And
I thought actually the cab sim sounded better than the actual like amp out. I thought, like, with the cab, because the cab sim just sounded so good, and it's a shame there's no way that you could, that the output isn't like a dry through, so you could go guitar into that pedal, dry through into your normal amplifier, and then cab sim out and use that just as the amp.
So you like have a bypass basically, so you take that out somewhere else, or maybe like an effects loop would be a good idea as well. Like, there's a few things they could expand on that range with. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that, because then that would be your kind of complete like drive solution, wouldn't it? If that had an effects loop and then you could use the cab out, you could just the cab sim out, you could go straight into a mixer and still have all your pedals and stuff in there as well.
Yeah, because I've had a few people saying I don't want a stereo rig, I want one amp on stage, but I want to rather than miking up the amp, I just want the amp for my own personal like sound on stage, yeah. But I want to send everything to front of house.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'd be nice to basically have all your effects that go into your amp and then just have that as just an amp sim that goes straight in. Or if you are miking up, you've got two, you know, distinct different voices that you can, the sound guy can then sort of mix with.
Definitely. And we also, one last pedal we looked at, the Way Huge Blue Hippo, which I think surprised everyone in yeah. that it sounded yeah. bloody amazing.
Absolutely yeah. amazing. That was my favourite thing that we tried.
Yeah. And I'm not a huge fan of chorus, and it sounded really, really good.
It was
good.
So much more than the chorus. It was a yeah. it was a vibrato as well, and not
did
not
some
even,
like rotary sounds
yeah,
out of it.
Yeah, it was a rotary like, and a vibrato and a chorus, and not by like switching to you know, click here for a rotary sound, click here. It was just by the like two just, controls.
Yeah,
just by the how incredibly broad and dynamic the controls were.
Mm. I really rated that, and actually it was funny because I think we mentioned when we were filming like for Gear of the Year. That we're going to do in a few weeks. There's so many pedals this year. Like, there's been some good amps and there's been a couple guitars, but pedals have seemed to have been like an amazing year.
We've really been, well, I think we're going to struggle for other stuff. Like,
we're going to struggle for bass this year.
Well, there has been nothing. We talked about that afterwards, didn't we? In that there's been nothing for bass this
listeners,
year.
If you can think of
Obi-Wan.
Anything good that's come out for bass this year.
Yeah. The Orange Obi-Wan. I've got that in the
is
list.
That is this year.
Yeah, that came out in January. That's about it.
That is, I mean, fortunately, that is very good. I mean, that's something that, you know, I bought because it was so good. Jay played with because it yep. was so good. So at least we've got that, and it is a really solid.
Has there been any bass pedals?
No, there have been some other bass amps. We had Ashdown release the Rootmaster 800. They actually also updated their whole series this year. So
yeah.
you got the ABM 600, which is the fourth evolution of the ABM range.
Okay.
So, and they're great. This is the first time that they've made bass heads that aren't designed to be used on full.
Yeah.
There's some new Mark bass heads this year, wasn't there?
Joe Branton's not going to include those in his
I'll
gear
be honest,
of the year, is he?
I don't give a toss. They sound awful.
They do not sound awful. I don't get it. I don't get your hate of Mark bass.
No, they're far too transparent. You know, I had to use the Randy Jackson
and
Mark
you
bass.
Don't, and you're annoyed that you don't use a P bass, so it doesn't sound good straight off the yeah. bat. Is that what you're
saying?
Oh, yeah.
I use a jazz bass. I use one of the most popular and sort of standard, this sounds good no matter what.
Basically, you're saying that these amps that are really transparent make your rubbish basses sound rubbish.
Yeah. No, I have great basses. I have great pedals. And yeah, I was like, oh, I can't actually drive this amp at all.
You know what could drive it though?
I'm just always going to sound pony.
You know what would sound really good through a Mark bass?
What?
P bass.
But I use a jazz bass. It's
no,
exactly
you're playing
the
wrong
same.
Bass.
It's exactly
last,
the same.
It's not exactly. Last week you had this exact conversation where you said that you got really annoyed because you were like, oh yeah. First of all, you were watching a Red Hot Chili Peppers.
No, it wasn't. It was Atoms for Peace.
Well, I mean, whatever. It's still the same fella. You were watching Flea and you were like, oh yeah, Flea sounds so good. Oh,
yeah, but Flea uses that. Awful basses for Red Hot Chili Peppers. He was using this
P-bass.
Yeah,
P-bass the best.
But he did also use his 1960 prototype jazz.
Yeah, but P-bass better. Yeah, we're going to struggle, I think,
yeah,
for some categories.
Yeah.
So we will be doing an official Listener's Gear of the Year category. But yeah, if there's anything that's come out that you think we might have missed, do let us know in the Facebook group. Because for things like bass, we might actually struggle a bit to find... Because
well,
we usually have about 10 candidates, don't we? Or 8 to 10 candidates, and then we whittle it down.
There's plenty of niche stuff. This is actually the first time we've done a Gear of the Year for Guitar Nerds.
Yeah.
So it's actually the first time that we can have a much broader
yes.
Gear of the Year, which is great because we yeah. can look at all the small boutique brands and all those smaller releases that are wicked. And there is a few bits and bobs for that. But I do still, you know, Gear of the Year is supposed to be the game changers and stuff. And of course, those little boutique things are never going to be that because they've got such a small... you know, market share, I guess.
Of course. But, you know, it's also dependent on what we've tried and what we've had our hands on
yeah.
and listened to and stuff. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a few curveballs this year. I'm rallying behind maybe the Count to Five for the Gear of the Year, but we'll see.
Yeah, maybe. It's funny because, you know, I was messing around with it today and I was just like, oh, yeah, it's like a looper that does loads of kind of weird and kooky stuff that doesn't really record for very long. And actually, I was like, Zvex did that 10 years ago with
yeah.
the Lo-Fi Loop Junkie.
Yeah.
And you forget that one of those... Actually, they're one of those companies now that sort of... no one cares about, and I think that's wrong, but they kind of launched a lot of the boutique stuff, and now everyone's kind of just like, everyone's doing it, so they're sort of been left a little bit behind, because now they're releasing everything as Vexta stuff. They're not doing anything kind of, and they had some stuff at NAMM that they announced that never came out, and yeah,
it's funny how these companies come and go, really. Like you know, like we used to talk a lot about Pictronics, and from what I can see, they haven't released a huge amount.
But
I guess the Echolution 2?
But it's
they've just done the Echolution Pro, haven't they?
Oh yeah, sure.
It's like, but it's once again, it's like all MIDI, and like there's nothing really to control on screen.
But it's so, it must be so hard to be a big boutique company, because as soon as you're big, you're not a boutique company, and then all the smaller companies have one up on you.
About, I'm not sure that's true though. What about Strymon?
And Wampler?
You'd still, I think Strymon probably more so than Wampler.
I think Strymon are a flash in the pan.
You think Strymon are a flash in the pan?
Yeah, I do. No, I do. I think there's this...
They've got like 15 really good pedals.
No, they introduced a complete range of really good pedals, really good pedals that companies like Boss are already proving are really overpriced pedals, because Boss can do exactly the same thing for much less money. Mm-hmm. So that's it. It's just a pedal company that turned up, put smart boxes instead of the trend for boutique, which is give it a funny, normally sexist name and you know, paint a doodle on it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So they went the opposite.
What's wrong with the Knockers Overdrive?
But they went the opposite. Did like, you know, a smart box, smart name, charged £350 for it, and everyone was like, yeah, these pedals are great. And yes, they are great, but Boss approving that sort of quality is completely separate thing from a price tag.
I think also it's one of those things, I think you'll find it, I think things like the Timeline, obviously they sound great, and you see them on so many pedal boards, but then you saw the same thing with the DL4.
Come on, and Eventide as well.
10 years ago, and now everyone sold their DL4s and bought Timelines. So I think it's only a matter of time now before someone brings out something else that suddenly appears on every pedal board.
But the Eventide Space surely was that before the Strymon.
Yeah, I mean, well, even the big Eventide things, you know, we're also trying to do that. But, you know, I think it's a case of... everyone sort of like, certainly, and you know, and I think I've certainly been a victim as well. Everyone sort of follows trends, and you just go, oh, everyone's using one. I know they sound great. I'm just going to buy one. And, you know, I've had various people walk into store and go, yeah, I want a Mobius, a Timeline, and a Big Sky, like without even plugging them in. And that's like £900. But how often do you see like the big trio on pedal boards now? It's like so commonplace. And I think it'll only be a matter of time before other things start to.
Well, we have to see what Boss's next move is after the DD500. Is it the MM500?
Well, I don't think we should forget like the RV6 as well.
Sure.
Introducing
the RV6 sounds great.
Well, that's really it. Does. Really high quality shimmer function on a really affordable pedal.
Yeah.
I don't think that should be sort of underestimated just because it came in the same box. It wasn't released by Strymon, didn't have a fancy name. It still had a lot of those tones that people were specifically buying Strymons for.
Yeah.
And I think it's good that with that example specifically, you know, the RV5 was so pony.
You say that every time.
I do say it every time, and that's because it's true. And the thing is that it's good because the RV6 is, it's Boss saying, okay, look, yeah, we know. And here you go, here's something better.
But the thing is,
they'll continue that, and that, like, because, and we know from experience, because we've spoken to them and we've met the top fella at Boss, and we know that they are very switched on,
but
they are listening to what people want.
Well,
and that is really cool. It's really exciting, and I think that, you know, as we've been saying, I don't think we should be surprised that this year, us four specifically, I don't think we should be surprised that this year has been a good year for pedals, because we predicted that last year.
Yeah,
you know, we said that. Stuff like
you heard it here first.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just stuff like we've been saying that Strymon, and I think Strymon specifically have pushed companies like Boss and Electro-Harmonix to be like, okay, right, we really need to up the game, and I think both those companies have done that.
Yeah,
well, you know, Electro-Harmonix by releasing a new pedal every 3 weeks, and Boss by addressing the fact that, you know, the DD20 wasn't up for competing, wasn't what people wanted, and they didn't have a viable competitor, and so they've released the DD500, And the RV6 was a bit pony. Sorry, the RV5 was a bit pony, so they released the RV6.
Let's not forget the Boss bass driver as well.
Absolutely.
Two more candidates for bass. And the bass stuff has jumped into my brain.
As well. Let's not forget the Blues Cube as an amp.
Blues Cube. Yeah, BB1X is a bit of bass gear. DD Ramone P bass came out this year.
Yeah, let's forget that. No, on the Boss thing, also, the Jazz Chorus.
JC40, yeah, absolutely.
That's great. This is the first time. I mean, it was the Wazzacraft stuff that was last year, wasn't it?
No, that was year before. 2014.
Really?
Yeah.
Blimey. Oh, Christ.
But it's still 2013, you mean?
2013?
Yes, 2015 now.
But still, this is the first time, I guess, Boss have looked into almost reissues, and that is what all the boutique companies are doing.
Yeah.
You know, they're all trying to make Centaurs
it's funny, really. It, just like with a lot of films, there's just like there's very little originality at the moment, especially with boutique companies, because I think it's so easy to just go online and pick a circuit, get a basic idea, and then kind of mess around with it. And actually, that's what I really loved about all the Bigfoot stuff, was that Reese designed everything from the ground up. Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to take a circuit and I'm just going to modify it and change it to how I want. It's like, this is the sound that I want, and then basically reverse engineer it from the ideas that's in his head, which is why they sound so good and so unique as well.
The competition this year, particularly in the pedal category, is going to be very difficult. And I think we're all going to have to fight the corner very strongly
for ones we want to win. Yeah.
So we're recording in a couple of weeks. So we should do. I'll put up the listeners category.
I think that's important as well, because I think there's a lot of people who possibly weren't listening to us a year ago.
Sure.
And so perhaps we need to go back over exactly what gear of the year is, and how we like people being involved with it and stuff.
Sure. Yeah, we'll do that on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, where we'll kind of outline what gear of the year is, and taking your submissions for the listeners' gear of the year, I guess.
Can I, just before we move on,
yes.
I've had a couple of days off recently.
You're fun employed for about a week, aren't you?
Fun employed for a week before I start my new job. And so I've been doing a little bit of looking around at stuff, and I was bored, and I just looked up I was trying to find videos of people performing the Star Trek theme on theremin, and I found one, and then one of the related videos was the Moog theremini.
It's theremini.
Well, theremini. Have you ever played a theremini?
No,
Matty.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They are. I tell you what, I really think I'm going to buy a theremini after watching these videos. They look absolutely incredible.
Your setup is very quickly not going to consist of any guitars.
No, it will continue to.
How would that differ from his setup now, bearing in mind the state of the Telecaster?
That's true. You need to sort your guitars out, because we borrowed
a guitar.
We
couldn't even use it for the video.
We didn't use your telly because the output jack is absolutely knackered.
Really?
Yes. If you plug anything into it, the cable just falls
Matt
out.
Matt could
again.
Barely play your telly or your Les Paul, because the action was a good foot off of the fretboard.
The action is perfect on that Les Paul.
That's perfect for J. Cross.
I've got no problem with the action. The fact that we couldn't plug your telly in.
In fairness, I haven't used the telly. I haven't plugged the telly in for ages. I lent it to a mate.
Oh, right, okay.
I lent it to a mate for a tour, and I don't think I've touched it since.
It doesn't even have strap buttons.
Yeah, it's got no strap button on the bass.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Anyway, theremini. So, did you know that with the theremini, as well as just using it as like a standard theremin,
yeah,
you can, there's like a fair amount of pitch correction and quantizing that it has got built into it, and that you can dial in how much pitch correction you want. So
you can sound like Kanye West.
Well, no, but what you can do is you can make it so that, you know, obviously with a theremin, a lot of it is to do with your hand position and your hand, like how close or far away your hand is from the
the
receiver. What you can do is, and obviously if you're in between notes, you'll get a weird bum note. What you can do is you can turn the quantization all the way up so that it won't do that, and it will just,
so it sequences through a scale like a dulcimer or
absolutely.
something.
But what you can also do is you can put in your own scales.
So it's always like auto-tuning, basically.
Essentially like auto-tuning. They look wicked. They look so much fun. And like, I think if you've got it all the way like set to top quantization, like super easy to play.
And you can look super cool.
And you can look... Oh, that was a trick, wasn't
that
it?
That could be a contender for other gear of the year.
No, they've been around for years.
Yeah, that came out this year.
Out for 5 years or something.
No, not the Theramini, not the digital ones.
Really?
No, not the digital ones. Okay. The Theraminis are really new.
I wouldn't ever dare question Matt Knight.
So. I know.
Is it really that recent? I thought they'd been out for ages.
He's Googling. I can see he's Googling.
I'm going to find out.
He's definitely Googling. While you Google, Matt, and you find an answer to that, should we dive in some news?
Nudes.
EVH announcing the 5153 LBX. Now, I thought this had been announced before, but it's only just come into the news feed.
I think most retailers knew about it. I don't think we mentioned it on a podcast. Okay. I'm pretty sure it was embargoed, but yeah. I've known for ages.
Okay, so what's the 5153 LBX?
I didn't know.
It is a lunchbox-sized 5150.
I'm sure we've talked about this before.
Of pure awesome. That amp is going to be absolutely...
Oh, we have talked about this. So that's what it is.
Yeah. So 15 watts, two-channel, I assume. Just like it's a 5150, basically, but tiny.
It's a mini 5150. In fact, I don't even know if it's two-channel. Yes, it is two-channel, but they share an EQ.
Okay. Which I think
you get the crunch channel and the full burn channel, so no real clean, but you can dial the.
But that's not why you buy a 5150, I guess.
No, well, actually, I don't know. Eddie Van Halen's got a pretty like top-notch clean sound, but it's yeah. I mean, the great thing is, it's going to be like an amazing competitor to something like the Tiny Terror because the gain structure is so like more mid-heavy and sort of tighter than a Tiny Terror is.
Price-wise, does it compete with the Tiny Terror?
Yeah, I think they're going to be... Actually, no, I think they're going to be a little bit more, actually. I think they're going to be about $599 or
$699. Well, $599 is not the end of the world, really.
And also, that's all you'd be paying if you wanted a Blues Junior and a drive circuit, because you'd have to buy a drive pedal for £100.
Okay, you know, that's... I mean, but this doesn't have a speaker. This is just a head.
I suppose, but it's got... I love how that direct out.
That's your first thought about anything.
Is it close to a Blues Junior?
This car is £12,000. That's only the same as, like, you know, 24 Blues Breakers. No, Blues Breakers? Blues Juniors. That's not... I don't know.
Great
like
maths.
Yeah, no.
I don't think there's any... I don't think there's any direct out.
Oh, is there not a direct out?
No.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, at Plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Okay.
But then a lot of lunchbox heads don't tend to have... Not a lot of them have it.
That is weird, though, because the... I guess EVH is... Because EVH is still Fender, right?
Yes.
Because I actually
Well,
think
I think they distribute it, but I think they're a company in their own right, aren't they?
Are they not part of FMIC? I think they're part of the Fender... Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're part of the Fender Musical Instrument Corporation.
I believe
they
are as well.
There might be a product they... Maybe it is a product they own.
Well, it's just... The thing is that it's very strange that this would come out straight after... Maybe not straight after, but...
Very
you know,
close
those,
to.
Those PV heads only came out fairly recently.
Yeah,
you know, the PV Classic and the...
Yep.
The 6505.
Yep.
Maybe it wasn't the 65... No, it was a...
I don't think it's very strange. I think it's probably...
Well, yeah, but like it's... Because they've both got direct out.
Okay.
What I mean is they've got a direct out.
Yeah.
And it's and are cheaper than the 5150.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think is a bit weird, is that they, you know, I guess maybe they think that the EVH brand is a bit stronger than the PV brand, which has admittedly taken a bit of a knock over the last...
Oh, certainly in Europe, because you haven't been able to get stuff. So.
And but because of that documentary.
Yeah, I mean, that documentary hasn't helped them out a lot, but... So,
it's got 5 preamp tubes in it. Like, it's really full on. It's got like a proper tube-driven effects loop, and then 2 preamp valves for each channel as well. So it's like a really full on mini amp in that box.
I think those are going to do really, really well, because obviously, you know, everyone is trying to kind of downsize their rig, and metal players have had a couple of options. Obviously, Orange have been providing that, but you know, not every company has been producing, particularly companies that do high gain stuff. Haven't been producing small, affordable heads. So good to see a couple of new options in the 6505 and the 5153 LBX, which I assume stands for lunchbox.
Yeah, I think it does.
Another
so, that's what I thought when I first saw it. I was like, that probably stands for lunchbox.
Another company producing a slightly downscaled amp. Boogie have just announced the Mark V 35. I'm assuming this is a 35-watt version of the Mark V combo.
Well, that's what I thought, but it's not. It's they because they didn't make... it's basically the Mark V 25 head they never made in a combo, and this is the combo version of the head.
It's so much
it's got
money.
It's got the extra power option, so it goes 35, 25 or 10, and it's got 2 solo channels, basically.
Okay.
They also have, on their website, have a very, very limited... one in a flame quilt mapled chassis, which looks awesome.
Nice.
But yeah,
is it a 12-inch speaker or a 10-inch speaker?
It'll be a 12. They definitely wouldn't do a 10. That would sound...
A bit weird.
That would sound very weird. So yeah, I think that they are...
It just looks super
small. Oh, wow, they are actually doing it in a head, which is odd, but they've said the head is in the traditional compact... is in the 19-inch format, which is the same size as the normal...
Yeah,
Mark V head. So maybe it is a smaller version of... No, I think, it must be like a slightly bigger version of the 25-watt head, which seems a bit weird. Like,
I thought this was really weird, because it came out of nowhere as well, didn't it? Like,
yeah,
there'd been no press of it or anything. And I mean, you say it's expensive, Joe, but like...
It's $2,000 for a 112 combo.
I mean,
it's true.
That's how much. It's not $2,000 though, is it? And that's how much. Because what's a Mark V? They're 2.5, aren't they?
2,700.
You know, so over two and a half grand. And this, I think, is more usable.
Probably, yeah. No, you're probably right. I can't not think of 112 combos as not being usable live. You know, they're so small.
They are usable live.
Yeah, depending on what you're
playing. I mean, a Hot Rod Deluxe is only a 12.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, and that's 40. You know, the Mark V is a 90 watt 1x12.
Yeah.
You know, they're so loud.
Yeah, you're right. You are right. I've never been able to...
You're too materialistic, Joe.
I've never been able to justify
you're too
the price point of Mesa Boogie.
I think the thing is, you don't like combos, do you?
I don't like small things.
Okay.
From a bass player, would a bass player ever use a £2,000 combo? Like, is there anything for bass that's £2,000?
No, not in a combo, not really, no.
Even in a head, though, there's not going to be that much.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, most of our heads are about £2,000. Like, most of our big all-valve heads are sort of £1,500 to £2,000. Ashdown, CTMs, all the big block stuff by Ashdown, Ampeg, all their valve reissue, the Heritage range, all that stuff's like... You think with bass, for the AD200, which is probably your staple standard all-valve bass head, that's £1,500. And for the same sort of staple standard in guitars, you're probably paying £600, like for your sort of standard all-valve head.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? I don't know whether it's just because of the sheer amount of power, and it's probably down to the transformers that physically need to be used for an AD200 to kick out 200 watts, because a guitar amp would never need, realistically, 200 watts all valve. In fact, I think the only valve amp that's ever come out that's full valve that's 200 watts was the Marshall Major, which came out, I think, in the late 70s, early 80s.
Not, and not they were the notorious. Matt amp stuff.
Matt amps went up to 120. The Marshall was notorious for basically catching on fire and blowing up because it was so powerful.
Orange
it
was
just Orange Thunderverb 200,
which is a bass amp stroke guitar amp.
But it was also, also a bass amp. No, it wasn't.
Really?
The Thunderverb was designed as a bass amp. The 200 was designed as a bass amp / guitar amp.
Yes.
But once again, was uber expensive because of the transformers and the sheer amount of valves that have in it.
Yeah. Oh, that was a loud firework outside, I'm assuming.
Or someone shooting walkers.
It could be that. I think you're watching too much Walking Dead.
Yes.
Let's move on to the next bit of news. Fender, this only came out today. Fender Custom Shop announces the Mike Campbell Heartbreaker guitar. Jay, who's Mike Campbell?
Mike Campbell is the other side of Tom Petty.
Okay.
He was really uninterested.
But when he turns around, there's another side of it.
He's like Voldemort. Voldemort and Quirrell.
I was really uninterested in this until you pointed out what it is, because I saw it and I was like, it's another Butterscotch 52 Tele. How is this a signature?
So that's the thing. This is sort of, and it's actually quite an interesting video, quite an interesting story, and they've done a video with him. So Mike Campbell is the other guitarist in the Heartbreakers, and he has just, this signature guitar is, as Joe quite rightly says, a 52 Tele, except it's not a 52 Tele. It is a Broadcaster, which is very, very cool and very interesting. So in the video, he explains how he bought this from a secondhand shop or a pawn shop or something. And it was only after he bought it that someone was like, oh, that's a Broadcaster, mate.
Okay.
He got it for $600.
When?
Gotta be the 80s.
No. It was, I can't remember. It was either
the 74.
Okay,
it was 74. So that was the year of the first Tom Petty record.
Right. Okay, cool. So it was in the early to mid 70s that he got it. And I mean, even then, that guitar must have been worth a lot more than $600.
I don't know if it would.
Really?
It was amazing, some of the stuff that people picked up in the 70s and 80s for basically no money.
And then tore apart and put EMGs in.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, you know.
I mean, this is the first production year.
Of course.
Of what we would now consider to be a Telecaster.
Of course, but we've talked about this before in that people sort of didn't realise how important this stuff was. Because you think that guitar was only, you know, 20-something years old.
Fender were just about to be bought out by a big corporation because they weren't doing very
already
well.
Already had been for, I guess. Well, yeah, they'd changed hands. You know, they'd gone to CBS at that point, and then there were more changes down the line. But yeah, I just wonder if people didn't know. That's why you see so many people like, oh, I've got the 50s Les Paul. Yeah, it's got a Floyd in it and some EMGs.
That's
why also guys like Tom Whitrock, who's like an avid, like 59 Les Paul collector, when they did Beauty of the Burst in the late 80s, he had 12 of them, because at that time he was just like, they were sort of expensive, but no one wanted them. No one wanted those guitars. So he just bought loads of them, and it just so happened that now they're all worth about $1 million.
Imagine that. Just like, yeah, I mean, bought some guitars. They must have been like 10 grand or something back in the day.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing a video with Slash, and he was talking about his one, and he paid something like $5,000 for it. And so he said like 89 after Appetite for Destruction came out. And Obviously that was a lot of money then, but considering that then it's now, obviously his one's going to be worth way more, but if you were going to buy one, you're going to pay at least £200,000, if not more.
Crazy.
Well, I mean, reissue is $5,000.
Yeah.
I mean,
an original broadcast is going to set you back like, I don't know, £50,000, probably.
Probably £50,000. I mean,
surely more than that.
I don't know, it's difficult because the 52s, 53s, I think you could probably get a 52 or a 50, probably a 52 or 53 for like 25 to 30.
Okay,
so a broadcaster would be more money.
It's funny, isn't it, that tellies don't go for anywhere near as much money as strats do, even ones that are a bit more prestigious.
Like
early 60 strats go for silly money, or you know, late 50s early 60s strats go for silly money. So what's the rest of the story behind the Heartbreaker?
That is the rest of the story behind the Heartbreaker.
Okay, so how close is it, I guess, to the original guitar?
He said, he in the video that Fender Custom Shop have put up, he sort of talks through a couple of the, you know, the nicks and the... he does say that he's never cleaned the fingerboard.
Okay.
So on his one, it looked absolutely vile.
Have they recreated that with sort of dead skin?
They have not put any of his dead skin on there.
Okay.
No. Dale Wilson still is alive. That's okay.
Okay.
Dale Wilson is the master builder.
I got that.
There you go. He says it's just a complete recreation, and he's, you know, it looks amazing.
It looks very, very nice.
I mean, to a certain degree, and Joe has slumped back in his chair because it's like, you're talking about a 50s telly. This is boring. And I understand that. But, like, for me, this is one of the most exciting things that Fender Custom Shop has ever done, because I'm not a huge Strat fan, and I kind of get a bit bored of, okay, cool, so here's another... You know, this is something that's genuinely very different, and, like, a piece of guitar rock and roll history. You know, this is a 1950, this is the only guitar Fender were producing in 1950.
I was just reading that apparently they reckon even though there's no official numbers, they probably only made 500
no-casters.
Exactly. So the broadcaster would have been like probably more limited than that.
And that is what I think Fender should be doing nowadays is like, this is a real, this is the first guitar. I mean, as far as I'm aware, I always thought the Broadcaster was the first
electric.
First electric.
It's a little bit more complicated
first electric
than that.
Solid body.
Yeah, yeah. Of course,
also
yeah.
A bit more complicated than that. But yeah, commercially available things that we know now. Yeah.
So the fact that they've not done one until 2015 is pretty mental. And, you know, presumably it just comes down to the fact that, you know, the 52 telly is a lot more desirable, and
I guess it's more that there's an artist tied into that particular guitar.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be weird for them to re-release this just as a standard custom shop model, because most people would just buy the 52 telly.
You can buy an Esquire reissue. Mexican Esquires, and you know, that's like, I would say a lot more esoteric than something like this.
But it's also a bit different, and there's a bit of kind of like fetishization around one pickup guitars, you know.
I suppose, yeah.
Whereas this, you know, if they release this as just a normal custom shop non-signature, I would say 95% of people would just buy a 52 telly. Whereas
a 51 no-caster.
Yeah, and this brings in, you know, Heartbreaker fans and people who know about the story of the guitar and people who are into more limited stuff. So.
This is super limited. Super limited. They haven't announced how many they're doing, but it's super limited. Apparently, they're going to include a bunch of Mike Campbell's actual guitar plectrums.
Sweet.
That said, if he treats his guitar plectrums any way like he treats his fingerboard, I would not touch those guitar plectrums.
Yeah.
Smell those picks.
Yes.
We've talked a lot about the new Gibson 2016 models. What we didn't mention is we've only talked about half of the story.
Yeah.
The traditional lineup. So that encompasses not only traditional Les Paul traditionals, but Les Paul standards, all the Les Pauls that we've talked about already come in a traditional variety. They've announced today that there is another variety available, the High Performance Series. Matty, what do you know about it?
Well, these were, to dealers, announced basically at the same time. And initially, I think they were going to launch at the same time, but the High Performance wasn't going to be due till later. And then I think they kind of put it off for a little bit, and then they've kind of I think they've made some changes. When I saw the initial spec, I think a lot of it was like weird drawings with like stuff crossed out, so they were like, oh, we're not sure if we're gonna do this or do that. But effectively exactly the same guitars. It's just that you've got the traditional, which has the, you know, the standard kind of, I'd say, 2012 specs, you know, all the specs you'd expect from a traditional guitar.
When you say traditional, you don't mean the Les Paul traditional, you mean the traditional series.
Or the traditional spec, or the or T-specced guitars, you know, so, or, you know, original neck, vintage tuners, you know, a normal neck width, you know, to match that kind of year. The High Performance features a contoured neck heel, so very similar to the Les Paul Access. Titanium fret, so they've gone for titanium because I think some people were saying that brass was maybe too soft, or that some people didn't like the brass nuts, so they've gone for titanium. But it features the same nut style with the zero fret that the 2015s had. New neck width. Now, as far as I'm aware, I haven't seen one, but what I've heard is the neck width is wider than the traditional neck, but thinner than the 2015 neck.
Okay.
I think they're going for an ivory. I think they're basically going for an ivory.
How much does a range have to be unsuccessful for a company not to pursue it?
Well,
but the thing is, it wasn't unsuccessful in the fact that loads of people bought them and loads of people really liked them. It's just that there's probably more people out there who wanted a traditional Les Paul who couldn't buy one, and now they cater for both people. So you can basically, there's no guitar that you can't buy in a traditional spec or a high performance spec. It's two guitars or a series of guitars, and you can have two different specs on either one.
The thing is we wouldn't be having this conversation had Gibson done this last year.
That's what, I mean, this is what everyone wanted. This is like the dream scenario.
Because there are a lot of people who wanted, there are a lot of people who, as soon as those, because, I mean, like, even the Tronicle tuners are still super popular, you know, at £200 a pop or whatever. You know, there are a lot of people out there who want the auto-tune function. There are, you know, and there are.
The four of us would be sitting here saying, if this was released instead of 2015, the four of us would be sitting here saying, what is this weird pony Gibson high performance?
I don't
line?
Think
You know, lots of weird. I think a lot of people said that when I remember talking to a friend of mine who was saying that, you know, he was around before pedal tuners, and when the first company brought out the first pedal tuner, like, tune by ear, mate, don't need a tuner, tune by ear, tune to the rest of the band. And I think it's when first electronic tuners that were affordable came out, people were like, why don't you need that? Got a pitch pipe, you know. And it's just I think it's effectively the same thing. It's just that people people don't, you know, are sort of afraid of new things like that. That effectively, guitars are such an old technology that people get really
absolutely
funny with them when you change it.
I think that the sort of 2015 was, to a certain degree, Gibson trying to be Apple. I think they were trying to sort of go, okay, you know, because when like the iPad came out, everyone was like, what on earth will anyone... It's a big phone. What are you going to use that for? And now, you know, I mean, I'm using one right now. They're just... Everybody uses them. You know, they're so commonplace. And it was... Steve Jobs, I think, made, like, quite a good living out of giving people what they didn't realise that they wanted. And I think that's kind of what Gibson tried to do with the 2015 range. And it hasn't worked. And if they come at it with them, you know, I think they were expecting to really blow the market up and change the game.
Yeah,
you know, I really think they went into it with the best of intentions. I don't think they've gone, you know what's going to really piss off the internet, let's make, you know what's going to piss off Joe Branton in Brighton, that's not what they set out to do. What they set out to do was to absolutely blow apart the market and change the game. And I think that really shouldn't go I think a lot of people are going, oh, they're just trying to wreck with their run. It's not, you know, I think they should be applauded for trying to innovate, as you say. And that's something that we've said a lot, is that,
yeah,
you know, this market can get a bit stagnant, and we do get a bit bored of just seeing loads of reissues. And when someone tries to do something different, it's really good. The 2015 range was not successful. Had they come out and done this, I think we would be having a completely different conversation.
Mm.
I think we would be saying, like, okay, cool, look, let's just, you know, this is great. It's a good way to diversify.
This is the best solution, definitely.
Yeah. There's quite a few other spec changes that it's funny, really, because, you know, that I was just reading while we're chatting there about, obviously it's got the next generation of G-Force, in a sense that what they've done is improve loads of things that I've had loads of people say, like, what if I want to tune manually? And if you try and tune G-Force manually, it feels a bit clunky. And apparently they've changed all the tuners now, so the tuners are just as smooth as normal tuners, but you've got the auto function on there as well. Gold-plated multi-jack. They've put smooth silent action toggle switch. I suppose that's to basically say that old toggle switches are actually a bit naff, and they can be a bit clunky. But the weird thing that they're not really mentioning is that dip switch for over 150 watt rewiring options.
What?
Yeah. So I don't really know what that is. I have no idea. I'm assuming that because everything's circuit board inside, it's giving you the option to basically plug and play different pickups from other manufacturers and wire them how you want without needing to solder. I'm just assuming that's probably the idea that they're going for.
Okay, weird.
They're also, all the saddles are titanium as well, so could sound better. Obviously, they're going to last longer. And new case as well, fortified aluminium case.
Wow. So,
specific models only.
Do we know what case is coming with the traditional series?
I'd imagine if you buy a traditional one, you get the old style.
Yeah, the 2016 case. The 2015 case, don't you?
Yeah.
All right, so the C3PO.
Yeah,
C3PO.
No, you don't get the gold cases.
Do you not?
I don't think.
I think you do.
No, you don't, because everything comes with gig bags again, apart from traditionals and standards, and they come with more traditional black cases, black toilet cases.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Okay. Cool.
And they say high for the standards. They'll have, like, obviously better flame tops on than the standard traditional spec ones.
Okay.
I'm not 100%. I don't know when these are landing. I'd imagine probably around now that this kind of gone live, because none, even the traditional spec stuff wasn't live on the Gibson website, but it's all up there now.
Yeah, they only just posted about it today, so cool.
But yeah, right, sounds like it could be quite good, so
I think it's a nice compromise. Let's do one more bit of news. We'll do a question and then we'll answer a whole bunch more questions in the Patreon episode. So Walrus Audio, who are a kind of boutique pedal manufacturer, have announced the Vanguard Dual Phase. Now, Joe, you've been reading about this and there's a bit of a story behind it.
Yeah, I think you've been reading about this as well, haven't you, Matt?
Yeah, it's kind of like Walrus Audio sort of snuck around for a little bit and sort of released a few pedals. It's kind of cool, but they're not like massively in the forefront of everyone's sort of pedal boards, but they do some very cool stuff. And I think the first thing that I saw them, they did the Fuzz and Trem that had like the two joysticks on it, and they do a couple of like cool overdrives and a compressor, and this one's like, I don't know, well, two phases in one pot?
This is a double phaser in series, but both phasers can be, you can select the type of phaser it is, between like a 10 stage plus regeneration, a 4 stage plus pitch, and a 6 stage plus filter phaser. But you have two running in series, so you can have each of the second one.
So would one come out of one output and one come out of the other? Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, you've got a left out and a right out for it.
Oh, and you can actually, it's got a remote input, so you can use a remote input to change between the two individual phases as well if you want to.
Yeah.
Which seems quite cool.
I really like Walrus Audio because they're a proper traditional style boutique effects company, in that they are what I guess what we were talking about earlier, weird, quirky artwork and completely bonkers ideas behind everything. I mean, I love the quote that they've that they say about this. The Vanguard comes in a copper-coloured enclosure featuring original artwork of two patrolmen on horseback in a post-apocalyptic world. They are stuck between two phases, humanity's past and humanity's future. Hear the tension of their existence when you plug into your instrument.
There we go. How could you tell they're in an apocalyptic wasteland from the picture on the pedal?
Well, obviously, that is what they say.
Okay,
that is
fine.
Oh, and I don't know. Maybe it's the sound. Something to do with the sound gives you the
feeling of sort of dread.
And of post-apocalyptica. Yeah, they've been watching a lot of Walking Dead.
Yeah, so have you.
Yes, I have.
So there we go. I quite want to get my hands on one of those. That sounds pretty bonkers. Dual phasers, always a weird. Do you remember like the Pictronics one, the envelope phaser and stuff that had two phasers?
I just remember that first one when I first started working with you, Mark, and we had that one. It was like the most expensive pedal we sold at like £200. Yeah, it was a great sounding phaser though, because it had like that sort of wah sort of quality to it as well, didn't it?
Just had no idea what to do with it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Let's do one question and then we'll call it an evening on the regular podcast, and we'll go and answer a ton of questions on the Patreon. Let's do some questions.
Questions.
Okay, Matt says, fell in love with the Custom Shop 51 Nocaster on Friday. £3,000 is a little out of my range, so can anyone suggest a similar model for significantly less? Squire Classic Vibe or Road 150s come to mind. Ideally Blackguard, Ash Pine Body, Fat Neck, etc. Matt Knight, you can have one suggestion.
I would go for, if you like the Custom Shop, I reckon the best choice would be the Road Worn 50s.
Yeah, just because you get just that nitro finish.
I think, yeah, for the look and the overall feel. But that's my choice. I'm going to go Road Worn 50s.
Jay Cross. I did this question specifically so I could turn to you and know what you were about to say.
Bahartelli.
Okay. Bahartelli's Blackguard.
Bahartelli is Blackguard. And the thing that that sort of separates it out over the Road Worn is the chunkier neck that you would get with a 51 Nocaster. Because you've also got a Nocaster neck pickup as well. Nocaster in the neck, twisted telly in the bridge. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. It basically is a Nocaster, except it says Telecaster on it. It's the best guitar that you can buy for under £1,000.
Joe Branton?
Well, I have to say, I mean, despite both what Matt said and what Jay said being absolutely correct, the classic vibe is still an absolutely cracking guitar. I don't think if we were to go back 10 years or even like 5 years, you would have anything on the market for that sort of money that's as good as the Classic Vibe, and I don't think it should be underestimated.
Thin neck on those is the only downside. They're not a traditional 50s neck.
No, true, that is a downside. But if did you say he played or saw?
He played one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but if you fall in love with that look, then the Squire, you know, it's like it's that pine body, you can see the grain and stuff.
And yes, the neck's different, but it is still brilliant. You're still getting, like, you know, it's still a vintage lacquered neck and it's still that sort of butterscotch finish. Well, but it's a pine body on the Classic Vibe.
Yeah.
So the grain is slightly different. And pine is much less common.
I don't know if it is.
Yeah, they're pine body on the 50s.
Is it on the... Yep. On the butterscotch? Because they do two. They do one in white blonde and they do...
I believe they both are.
Okay.
But pine's very unusual, but still a lot of the tonal qualities are very, very similar to Swampash.
I agree with you completely, and it's, you know, the if you want to spend £400, then buy the Classic Vibe, and if you're comfortable spending £650, then buy the Bahartelli, and if you're comfortable spending the £850 that the Road One's going to be, then buy the Bahartelli.
Very good. Very good. With that, we should call it an evening. We're going to do some more questions on the Patreon episode. We're going to be tackling pickup questions from Wade, metal questions from Chase, questions about controlling multiple pedals with one expression pedal, but from Rob. We're going to talk about sandpaper from Stevie, Vintage Modified Jazz Masters from Gabriel, 2016 Les Paul Traditionals from Moog, and some atmospheric synth sounds from Paul. If you wanted to listen to that, head over to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you'll get an extra half an hour, that's an extra 2 hours a month of Guitar Nerds content. Yeah, do that by patreon.com/guitar nerds, like these lovely people have.
Oh, wait. I just realised you were segueing onto that, and I didn't have the document open. I haven't even thought about voice. I'm quite poorly at the moment.
Eric Siri, Paul Corrigan, Dale Rasko, Jack Conroy, Will Clare, Chris Wilson, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Fletch Fletcher, Phil Tomsett, Moog Gravett, Colin Anderson.
Apologies to anyone who has either broken their headphones or gone deaf for the first few names on that list, because your volume was uncomfortably high, I would
say. Sorry!
Also, again, uncomfortably high. I'll compress that out in the mix. It'll be fine. Thanks for listening this week. As always, send your questions into facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, the internet's most friendly guitar forum. And thanks to everyone on there for keeping it friendly. There's no one's ever snarky on there. It's like super nice group. You know, tell your friends about the podcast. Do go to iTunes, give us a nice 5-star review and put a bit of text in there about how we're the bloody best on the internet and stuff like that. Or you can follow us on Twitter @GuitarNerds, or on Instagram @GuitarNerds, or on YouTube @GuitarNerdsVideos. You can follow me on Twitter @Mark_random. You can follow Matt @Matt_Nightsy. That's Night with SAE on the end. Follow Jay @JAYBN1, or Joe @Joseph_900. We will see you next week. Come on the Hawks.
Bye.
It's either Dagenham and Redbridge away or Morecambe away. Morecambe's a long way away.
Bye.
Come on the Dagenham.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.